everybody. This is Catherine Spires, and you're listening to Smart Mouth. Per usual, we have a guest this week, someone I've known for a couple years, Josh Scherer. Hi.
Hey.
Now, you are kind of old school in that you have a pseudonym online. It's not just your name.
Do you consider it a pseudonym? I've never thought of it like that.
Well, it's not your name. Is there another word for it? A handle. You go by a handle.
A handle. I grew up where in the era where that was called a handle, and like pseudonym was not. But I realize you're referring to Culinary Brodown.
Culinary Brodown.
Which is the URL I bought for $10 a year in college for the shitty blog that I started. I love it. It's a lovely shitty blog.
Do you still update it?
It's dead. No, I lost the URL to a weird Russian porn site.
Why not?
I swear to you, they took it over.
Do they use it?
At some point it did. I got a bunch of Instagram messages that were like, hey, I tried to get your recipe for a funnel cake cheeseburger and it was Russian cam girls just wondering what's up. I think that's dead now, and I think it's all just dead. So no, but it's all my social media handles, but people have been like, Josh Scherer, who goes by Culinary Brodown. It's like, no, I don't like ask people on the street, like, call me Culinary Brodown, a term that means nothing.
Well, I wonder if it's because old farts like me are the ones saying it and we don't quite understand what's happening, because you secretly are so young.
Not I'm getting older.
How old are you?
26.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
That's
26.
I'm no
You're
longer
26
like
now. That means I met you when you were like 22.
Yeah,
this is horrifying.
That's weird when you say it like that, I guess.
You're such a baby. And because here's something that I'm gonna say, and it sounds like I'm being aggressive, but I'm pretty sure people have said this to you before. I do think that sometimes people misunderstand where you're coming from with Culinary Brodown, because it has bro in it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, a lot of the reason I started it was to kind of subvert that idea. Like, I have always, you know, I grew up just with my dad and my brother, and in college I lived in a huge house of guys. But like, the whole thing about me cooking, it was always kind of to subvert that idea. And like, I actually did deal with a lot of shit from like, I mean, I did a really hyper masculine sport in college, right? Mm-hmm. I threw the shot put.
Okay.
And just like big, like 6'4", 270-pound Eastern European dudes, you know, just like throwing a metal ball. And so I did like kind of get a lot of shit from people about cooking, so seen as effeminate. And so I kind of wanted to put the bro thing out there and write from this weird caricature to kind of like subvert all that idiocy.
Got it. That makes sense.
When you hit the mic, it's making a tapping
noise. Oh, gotcha.
So either just hold it with one hand or it's like, keep it there.
Gotcha. I have very Italian hand motions.
So did you start cooking first or writing about food first?
I started cooking first. Talking about just growing up with my dad and my brother, no one really knew how to cook in the house. Mm-hmm. And so when I was like 12 years old, I, you know, was a total latchkey kid all my life. So I'd come home and just like watch Rachel Ray for 4 hours a day, which is, you know, 8 30-minute meals that you can learn in four
Absolutely.
Hours. Yeah, it's a direct math equation. And so my dad saw me take an interest in that, and he was like, there's a Trader Joe's 30 feet from our apartment.
Yeah.
Like, buy stuff and cook it, and that'll be your like daily chore. And
awesome.
So I've just been cooking since I was like, you know, 12 years old for my family, and then randomly started the blog when I had that like senior year panic in college of like, oh God, what do I do to make money?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lot of money in food writing.
I know. We were all stupid at one point.
Right.
But you did go into food writing for a little bit.
I did, yeah.
And then removed yourself from it at the first opportunity.
Just really yanked myself out. Oh, what a great decision that was, too. No, I mean, I still really love writing. Maybe we'll get back into doing it and doing some of the writing projects. But yeah, no, I've been producing all the food stuff for Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, YouTube's number one daily show.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, thank you. It's really sweet.
And you've just, like, at such a young age done so many different things, because you do have a cookbook as
well. Yeah, I do the Culinary Brodown cookbook, Recipes for a Dope-Ass Life. Which they wouldn't let me put that official, like, you know, subtitle or that subheader on the cover. But in my heart, it exists.
They wouldn't?
No, there was a lot of back and forth. Like, it wasn't like a forceful no, but I wasn't going to like fight for it. Says Recipes for a Dope Ass Life on the back cover.
Okay.
And they did let me take my author bio photo completely naked, covered in 60 bags of iceberg lettuce.
Right.
So that was big. I'll take one concession for the other.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I feel like if you'd been a couple years earlier, they would have been into it. And I say that only because of Thug Kitchen.
Yeah. But even they had an asterisk over the U in fuck on their cover. So you couldn't tell. You couldn't even tell what word it was. It was just F asterisk CK. Only through a lot of investigating can you determine that it says fuck on their cover.
I I didn't even know that I wasn't even thinking about that part of it. I was just thinking about the entire concept of Thug Kitchen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot what their official tagline is, but it's like, fuck these vegetables,
right,
or something like that,
right,
you know? And then, I want to fuck this carrot. I can't remember what it is, but it's something like that.
Wild like that. So that's good that you found a way to talk about food that also gets you paid.
Yeah.
That's living the dream, the
no,
food
for
writer
sure.
dream. No writing involved.
No, no.
But they do like give you, do you have an expense account? Because a big part of what you do is like take crazy ingredients and make things.
I have an unlimited budget. There is a limit to it, but
haven't gotten there yet.
I've actually gotten close the last time, because I did buy like a full A5 Wagyu rib cap that just sent me back several hundred dollars.
Oh my god.
But I got to make a kind of remix version of Chipotle's grilled steak to put in a $160 burrito, so that was rad. Yeah, the biggest segment that I do is called Fancy Fast Food, which it's really great because it's almost like they just saw what I was doing with Culinary Brodown and were like, do you want to do this, but for money and with a large platform? And I was like, yes, please. That would be lovely. And so, yeah, we do a fancy fast food thing where, you know, I make a Big Mac with a bunch of like hand chopped Wagyu ribeye and uni special sauce and stuff like that. And that's been a kind of huge bread and butter of mine. So it's my absolute playground dream job. Super cool company. Great environment to work.
That's good. Mm. You don't have to say that, you know.
I do. They're listening right now.
So when I asked you your list of food, you're hilarious. And most of them were snack foods.
Mm.
And a lot of them were like snack foods in different languages.
That sounds like me.
But then the non-snack foods that you wanted to talk about were very like comfort foodie type things. And one of them being, the way I'm going to pronounce it, is khachapuri. Tell me how you pronounce it.
Okay, so I have no personal feelings, but my Armenian barber at the Sport Clips on Lankershim and Vineland, because I asked her about what I said as khachapuri, and then she informed me that it was khachapuri, and that sounded way more right than what I was saying.
Right, I'm sure.
And she is a very big fan of it, because it is Georgian in origin, but you will find like a lot of Armenian spots selling, I guess, in the same way. I mean, the way she put it was that, you know, you'll find places in America serving tacos, but it doesn't mean that tacos aren't Mexican. I was like, I get it.
And of course, Georgia and Armenia are right next to each other. And I don't think that a lot of, at least on the West Coast, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but I feel like that part of the world, the Caucasus, we don't necessarily know that much about. Like, it's not really taught the way that Western Europe is and Eastern Asia is here, that sort of thing.
No, I actually have a friend, though, whose dad was from the actual foothills of the Caucasus Mountains.
Wow.
And he has this really awesome story of when his dad emigrated to the U.S., he went to the DMV, and under the, like, check your ethnicity, saw Caucasian, and he was like, oh my god, they have a box just for me. And he checked it, and they were just like, excuse me, sir, you're Middle Eastern. And he's like, no, 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 I am literally Caucasian.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's so crazy.
Shout out to Adam Shigem's dad. And Adam Shigem just got engaged. Just wanted to plug that.
How nice. Okay, so khachapuri is bread, flatbread-ish. The bread, we should say, has milk in it. Milk and I think eggs, too, are part of the ingredients. So we're talking about a rich bread. And then you put egg, cheese, and butter on top of it as well. And it comes in different forms. Like there's different regions of Georgia will have like different ways of doing it. So what is like the shape that you are most familiar with?
I'm familiar with just like a gondola, just this rich, buttery, eggy gondola.
Okay, good. Because I feel like that's the kind that I've most seen in Los Angeles. And I was trying to figure out if there was some, like, if the region that it's from is next to Armenia or something. It's not. Mm.
It's called Adjari?
Mm-hmm.
Adjari?
Yeah.
Khachapuri?
Yeah.
Hell
exactly.
Yeah. What a barber at Sport Clips.
So it's shaped like a boat, and they say it's because it's one of the few areas of Georgia that's on the sea instead of nearer to a lake. So they're like a boat going people. That sounds, I don't know.
The term boat people sounds.
I said boat going.
Boat going.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was actually very elegant.
It was. That was my bad.
I think that lots of times people try and retrofit those kinds of stories.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean,
I feel like almost every food origin story is completely made up.
Yes.
I mean, the French dip origin story in LA. It was like a guy named Officer French and he dropped bread. Bullshit. That never happened.
I like the one that pleases me the most is that the man had no teeth and he needed his bread to be softened. So they put it. Yeah, that one I like the best.
Oh my God. My teeth are going to rot out of my head. So I'm wishing that that's the
You'll
case.
I mean, you live in the birthplace of French dip. You're going to be totally fine.
Looking forward to it. Just slurping it through a boba straw.
Are you going to lose all your teeth because of all your packaged foods that you eat?
I think it could be that, yeah. I didn't go to the dentist for a solid like 14 years somewhere in the middle of my life.
Yeah.
So there's that. But like, I'm not helping myself with the like 15 Diet Cokes, you know, and just phosphoric acid.
You're just a Diet Coke boy.
Huge Diet Coke boy. I'm the Diet Coke boy. Oh. Actually, I'm a Coke Zero Sugar boy.
Oh, You should get an endorsement deal.
That if they're listening right now, I would love that because it's just burning a hole in my pocket and apparently in my teeth.
In your teeth. I mean, yeah, if you're going to do it, get paid. Right?
I'll debase myself for any amount of payment. I've proven that on the internet time and time again.
Good. So kachapuri, a very rich dish. And so Georgia shares borders with Armenia, Azerbaijan, Russia, and Turkey. And it's a little bit different from them in some important ways, partially just the geography of the place. It goes from subtropical to alpine. And so actually, not that all of our audience is in California, but I think people have an idea of like the myth of California and how you can come out here and you can grow anything and there's all this produce. And I really think it seems like Georgia is the same. It's supposed to be absolutely gorgeous. I had no idea.
I know so little about Georgia other than Khachapuri.
Yeah.
So I'm learning right alongside everybody else right now.
So I don't want to be reductive, but I do feel like Khachapuri, everyone chill out for a sec. It's similar to pizza. I'm not saying that it comes from pizza, that I would describe it as being like, oh, you know, Georgian pizza or anything like that. I'm just saying that if there's a bread product that's kind of flat and maybe there's some cheese on it, just in your mind's imaginings, if you hadn't heard of it before and you had heard of pizza. You know how people get sometimes if you compare their thing to another thing?
I do, but the funny thing, I mean, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, if we don't have enough backstory.
Go for it. Right now. We can move back and forth.
But actually, I mean, one of the reasons I said khachapuri is I need to decide how to pronounce this. I'm going to say khachapuri. That's more comfortable for me.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Some people might think you're putting on airs if you say it with the right accent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is, especially growing up in a big Vietnamese, in Little Saigon, in Westminster, Fountain Valley area, Vietnamese is one of those languages that my Viet friend told me, if you want to get any of the words right, you have to try and sound as stereotypical as possible.
Oh no.
He's like, you just have to do it, dude, because it's such a tonal language.
Oh.
It's one of those things where you can't pronounce it phonetically.
Got it.
And then you just sound like you're being a racist dick.
Oh, interesting.
So I just point and say number 27. But anyways, so the reason I said khachapuri is one of my favorite things is because I just moved up to the valley in North Hollywood. There's a huge Armenian population, and they're are a ton of Armenian pizza shop owners. And so you will go into these pizza shops and they will have like meatball sub, chicken parm, spaghetti dinner, pizzas. And then you will just see like khachapuri just couched on a random part of the menu.
Oh.
And a lot of them will just use pizza dough and just like twist it into the ajari shape into a boat and crack some eggs and butter on it.
Yeah.
Like the first time I encountered it was at a place called Bravo Pizza and Chicken, which I went to because they have an original broaster.
Oh,
the pressure fryer from back in the day.
Yeah.
And I went there and I saw khachapuri on the menu. And so I got fried chicken and khachapuri and I'm swiping chicken skin into the butter and eggs, having the freaking time of my life.
Oh my God.
But slowly I would see this pop up at more Armenian owned pizza shops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of these things where, you know, a lot of Armenians who emigrated, you know, kind of pre 1990s, I think just found an opening in pizza, things that they could sell to Americans. It's like a lot of Korean sushi restaurant owners in LA just found something they could market. And so a lot of these places will literally call their khachapuri breakfast pizza on the menu.
And because there's deeper. Eggs on it.
Exactly. And that's a way for like Americans, Californians to understand it, especially pre this like big foodie revolution of people seeking things out on Yelp.
Yeah.
Breakfast pizza. It's got pizza dough. It's got cheese. It's got eggs.
Yeah.
Breakfast pizza.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So another thing about it being similar to pizza is that some people say that like it was brought to Georgia from Italians, But it's convoluted because they talk about like Roman soldiers going through, and I'm like, well, Roman, that's way before pizza. Yeah. So that doesn't even have anything to do with it.
Is it though?
In terms of like ancient Rome?
I thought like the, man, one of those origin things. I don't know. I thought like, okay, have you ever heard the thing about ketchup? The origin of ketchup, it was actually a Chinese sauce made from fish.
Yes.
It's like, what the fuck significance does that have to modern day ketchup? You know what I mean?
Well, as a self-styled food historian, I do think it's interesting to see like how it moved through the universe. And the reason that it went from fish is just because of ingredient availability. Look at me standing for ketchup. I don't care. I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. Someone mentioned that like ancient Greeks technically invented pizza because they had like bread and they like smear some olive paste or whatever, and like that's technically pizza.
So here's my thought, like overall, bread and cheese go really well together,
and I'm a fan.
A lot of different cultures just did it in different ways. Some, like Northern Europe, you just take the bread and then a slice of cold cheese and eat them together, but in other places they baked it.
In America we have Little Caesar's crazy bread.
Yes, we do have that, our greatest,
our offering to the world. Yeah.
Yes. We're so proud of ourselves. So here's, from reading books about Georgia, I just feel like Georgians like to party.
Yeah, that has been my experience.
Really?
My very limited experience with Georgian people.
Here in California?
No, I was actually in Israel, and we were at a Georgian restaurant, and it was this dude in like a Guns N' Roses t-shirt who was like, "You like metal? You like American metal?" And we're like, "Yeah, sure, buddy." And he just like started smoking a joint in his restaurant. We're eating like a khinkali and like the Georgian dumplings and listening to Guns N' Roses, smoking weed in this dude's Georgian restaurant.
That's
they have like a long history of romantic poetry.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes.
So I offended a Georgian guy because he had a big old Georgian language tattoo on his arm. And I said, "Is that Sindarin from Lord of the Rings?" And he said, "No, it's my ancestral language, you dick." Anyways.
Just offending people all throughout the world, huh?
Really am.
So I feel like because they've been conquered so by so many different groups over the years, Persians, Mongols, Turks, like the Red Army, that they have this sort of sense of like, enjoy it while you can.
Yeah.
Apparently the word that they use to greet one another means victory. So you're just kind of like going full steam ahead as soon as you see someone. Just victory.
That's super hardcore. I love that.
I think so. That makes sense that like they'd be into metal, I guess.
Yeah.
The romantic poetry of our times. Also, there was a queen. So badass. Queen Tamar. 1184 to 1213 was her reign. And she conquered most of Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Eastern Turkey during her reign. And like the country lost it immediately after she died. And she was so cool that they called her the King of Kings. And now I wish my name were Tamara.
She sounds like the front woman of a metal band.
Right?
Like, I want that to be just an origin story of someone who isn't an ancient queen.
There should be an all-woman metal band called, well, should it be
queen
called
Tamar?
Queen Tamara, or should it be called King of Kings?
I feel like King of Kings is too, the first album should be called King of Kings.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. Okay. Yeah. Good, good, good. Okay. It is thought by botanists that the first wine grapes are actually native to Georgia. I did know that wine used to be a way bigger deal in Hungary than it is now. So I knew about a bit northern, but actually it was like from Georgia.
What happened in Hungary to get the wine? Was it the bad thing that happened to Hungary that you would think made all the wine grapes disappear when their country just got like decimated?
It was something about they started gifting wine to France and French people just got way more into it than they did and like went over there and like got a bunch of grapevines and then brought them back to France and like grafted them with local grapes. And they just like got more into it.
I thought Hitler just decimated the wine industry.
I mean, probably whatever had been there, he did. I am sure.
Makes sense.
It's good to blame terrorists for things like that. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. It's his fault, whatever happened. So the word in Georgian for wine is gvino. So it is assumed that all the Indo-European languages that have variations of wine, it actually comes from Georgian, which I think indicates their influence in it. They were super into Dionysus. Do you know anything about him? The ancient god, the ancient pagan god?
He was just like a complete lech, right? I mean, he was just drinking and...
He was down to clown. in all aspects. That was his entire thing. And his cult got super popular in Georgia.
I wonder why.
Yeah. They have the concept in their ancient culture of the tree of life, but their version of the tree is that it's actually covered in grapevines, just wrapping all the way around the tree. They became Christian at the same time that a lot of other places around them became Christian, but they stayed Christian when everyone else became Muslim. I'm going to argue that it's because Islam wasn't like no drinking wine and they were like, get out of here. No way. Oh,
good for them sticking to their guns, you know? Yeah, really exactly. Fighting for what's important.
Exactly. I think that for them, wine and Jesus are tied together. I say I think, but from what I've read, it really seems like it's like a wine-Jesus connection. Also, I wrote a term paper in college when I was a religious studies major about the migration from Dionysus into Jesus and how it's one and the same God.
Whoa. Can I read that? Can you forward that to me?
I should find it. I bet it was really good because I know that I used to know a lot more about this stuff than I do now.
We can trade term papers if that would make you feel more comfortable. Do you want to read The Penis is Mightier Than the Sword? Sexual Violence in Ingmar Bergman's Early Films?
I mean, kind of.
It's not great. I reread it recently. It's not great. Really?
Did you have bad arguments?
I don't think I watched any of the movies. I have another really good one about Happy Feet.
Do you?
And how it's really anti-dogmatic and anti-religious.
Anti-religious.
They have the great Gwyn in the sky and the religious elders who are kind of caricatures of Jews, which I find offensive because apparently I'm Jewish.
Find it offensive. Like, people are getting real offended about Harry Potter and how all the bankers were goblins.
That's just... Everyone's done it. Like, what? Just make him, like, tall. Just make him tall with a snub nose.
Right.
That's all you have to do to not, like, if anyone ever writes fantasy from here on out, just make your bankers, like, athletic and, like, snub-nosed and, like, you know, conventionally attractive. Like, why not? Right. What do you have to lose other than just sticking to, like, oh, Jews, right? We can call them Jublins or, like, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, that's... I do love how J.K. Rowling has a lot of revisionist history about Harry Potter. She recently said, I think there was at least one Jewish wizard in the wizarding world. Like, that's what her words were. Because someone asked her, like, Jewish representation in Harry Potter, and she was like, I can tell you there was at least one.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like, wow, thanks for having just an imaginary Jew.
You know, I kind of actually think that lots of times she means well, but it's new to her having to be such a spokesperson. Because the way that, like, she goes back and forth about which characters are gay actually, to me, often strikes me as someone who's just, like, in a panic.
Yeah.
And not necessarily coming from a bad place. It's just like, oh, fuck, what did I do?
Just flip it. Be like, all you know, sexuality is fluid. Like, whatever. Like, maybe Dumbledore, like, you know, who cares?
Right.
Why doesn't she could easily just do that, and then she wouldn't have to make a full call.
And also, she already made her money. So yeah. she can also stop talking about it.
She can just fuck off to Edinburgh wherever and live like the King of Kings, like King Tamar, you know? She could own entire countries. She could buy the Republic of Georgia.
Mm-hmm. She could.
I assume.
She probably could.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, but when you have enough money, you don't have to know how things work. You just say the thing. Yeah absolutely. okay, so there was this French dude who visited Georgia in 1686, and what he said is that Georgia is as fertile a country as any can be imagined, where you may live both deliciously and very cheap. Their bread is as good in any of the world, their fruit is delicious and of all sorts. Neither is there any part of Europe that produces fairer pears and apples, or any part of Asia bring forth more delicious pomegranates. He was super into the food there.
I see. He sold it really well.
I know, didn't he? He also wrote, truly, there is no country where a man may have an opportunity to fare better than this.
He was talking...
Georgia.
He was talking with
food.
Oh, I thought he meant, like romantically.
Well, maybe he meant that as well.
Maybe.
Yeah. Like, when you're drunk and not hungry, you have, like, time to think about other things.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But it was interesting because it was spelled fare, F-A-R-E, and it was the first time that it occurred to me that, like, bill of fare, like a menu, like food, I think he might have actually meant, like, eat better than this, and that the meaning of the word fare has changed a little bit.
I think he was talking romance. I think he was talking about sex stuff. Or is that completely out of context?
I'm just really feeling like you're a 26-year-old man right now.
That's fair. I'll stop. So how were those pomegranates?
Oh, goodness. So there was a woman named Dara Goldstein. She's working right now. She's a food historian. She's badass. And she focuses a lot on Russia and Eastern Europe. And she wrote a book called The Georgian Feast. And she argues, and it makes sense, I think, to me. So like we were kind of referring to earlier, we are somewhat familiar with Armenian food because there's so many Armenians in Los Angeles. Do we still have that stat that there are more Armenians in LA than anywhere else in the world, including Armenia?
Yeah, that sounds legit.
Yeah, that was a thing for a while. And she says that in times of war, Georgians never really fled. They never left, including when the Soviets came and took over. A lot of people just like from the other countries just booked it immediately and they didn't. And it was because they have such good agriculture there and their lives were very much about like growing all these delicious crops, and it ended up working out okay. Sometimes the USSR stuff is never always great, but other people's misfortune was their fortune because they could take their produce up into Russia and sell it, and it was wildly expensive because it was so hard to get natural, you know, Russia doesn't grow a lot of like delicious fruits, so they would just ship all their deliciousness up there and sell it at a wildly inflated price.
And there was like mad corruption in the USSR government, especially in regards to like acquiring food at the time, so that's probably a huge market for them.
Yeah, right. It's I watch The Americans, so I pretty much know
okay.
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was playing like I knew that as a historical fact. I was solely referring to what season 4 or 5 of The Americans.
When they have to investigate the grocery stores?
Damn, I wish you wouldn't have said that, because I would have seemed smart instead of just like, I don't do anything at night but binge watch Amazon Prime.
Here's my understanding about the show The Americans, is that they had all kinds of historians and linguists and all kinds of really smart people actually consulting on that show.
It's like we were reading a book, or less.
You say that as a joke, but I think about that a lot. Because there is a lot of really good television shows, and I don't necessarily know that they're worse than half the crap that's published.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, whatever you have to say to get through the day, that's cool.
Oh, you're
you
the
know,
rudest
but...
person. You know what I'm into right now? Almost a decade too late. The Good Wife.
Yeah, you tweeted about
that.
Did
I tweet that?
You did. We don't even need to talk in person. We can just read each other's
Everyone
Twitter
refer
feeds.
To Twitter. Thank you and goodbye.
I've never seen it. I don't know what it's about. It's the president's wife?
No, just a state's attorney.
Okay.
And ostensibly about that, but, you know, it's not really about that.
Does it get scandalous?
So scandalous. Scandals left and right. And also, what's the deal with Josh Charles is an overarching question that I have. Do you know who that is?
Not even a little bit.
Do you know Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
Yes. I love that movie.
The boy that Christina Applegate is into.
I've seen Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. I don't even know if the mic's on.
Yeah, they are.
I've seen Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, I mean, at least 15 times. Because it was always on HBO when I was a kid, and we always had the like free 3-month trial of HBO.
Yes.
And then we'd switch different cable providers to get the 3-month trial of HBO, and we'd play DirecTV against... You know that.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and so I was just always watching Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. It's one of my favorite all-time movies.
There is a line that I, to this day, say to myself when I'm done doing chores.
What is it?
The dishes are done, man.
Yeah. I always feel the, I'm right on top of that, Rose.
Yes, that's such
and
a good one,
no
too.
No one knows the reference.
Really?
Uh-huh. Literally no one.
Well, now I'm going to have to suggest that you actually quit your job. I know we were talking about how great it is, but if no one gets that reference, it's such a good workplace reference.
I'm like middle-aged in my office, by the way. You talk about me being young. I'm like a senior official elder councilman.
Really?
Yeah.
Has anyone who worked there, are they like just out of high school?
We have had some, back when we had like a bigger staff, like we had some just like, you know, like 19-year-old people who were like, you know, left, I don't know, high school or graduated, whatever, and just started like working in the film industry, which is actually really refreshing because in media, especially working for glossy magazines, I mean, it's one of those things where there's so much of a pay your dues attitude.
Yeah.
You know, and meanwhile, if you're not making a living wage trying to pay those dues and just getting like work to the bone, it's like, well, how can I make this, how can I reconcile this whatsoever? And so there's a huge kind of gatekeeping mentality in what I experienced of like mainstream kind of print media. And then now it's just like this wild west of just, you know, random like 22-year-olds working in management because they were really good at their job and they deserved it, which, yeah, you know, I'm sure there are other bad implications that come with that, but
man, I don't know, because I think partly it's a response to how unreasonably expensive college is now,
yeah,
and how going to college isn't a ticket to staying in the middle class anymore. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time, I think the only time it's been my responsibility to hire someone, it was at KCET, and really the boilerplate job listing always said like, and a bachelor's degree, like requirements, yeah, include a bachelor's degree. And I was looking at it and I was like, why?
Like 100%.
The job that we're hiring for, they have to know about food and do social media.
Mm.
This is not something that you're necessarily going to learn in college. This is probably something that the average young person just knows. The average, yeah, young person who would be applying for a media job, this is something they know about. So I got them to take it off, which was great. But
that's actually really cool that you did that.
I was glad that, like, I had a moment where I was actually thinking about things. You know, it's so easy to just go through the motions and do, yeah, like, just, like, go with the flow when you're in a work situation. But, yeah, I was really glad because I just thought about it. And I think about that, too, because in high school I worked at the Seattle Times. And I'm glad that I got a religious studies degree because I think I learned for my own personal edification so much. But yeah, I was already working at the Seattle Times in high, yeah, school. And I definitely could have just done that, mm-hmm, and gotten through that way.
Yeah, it's wild because so many people, especially in media, all throughout Twitter, have taken up the, you know, paid versus unpaid internship debate.
Yeah.
There's a big thing railing against unpaid internships, which, I mean, I definitely agree with, you know, pay your interns, pay people who are doing labor for you. But at the same time, the amount of like opportunity cost as far as money goes of doing an unpaid internship just pales in comparison to, you need a bachelor's degree. I mean, that's like $100,000 of things that you've paid. And people are like, if you have unpaid internships, then it, you know, holds out people who grew up underprivileged and, you know, without geographic access to those places. And it's like, yeah, that's also called college. That is our entire college system.
Yes.
There are ways around it, of course. I mean, free tuition at community colleges is becoming a huge, you know, I guess like hot button political issue.
Yeah.
But I mean, even then, if you're trying to recruit from, if you hold up this hierarchy of this college good, that college bad,
yeah,
you're just doing so much harm.
Absolutely.
I mean, I dropped out of UCLA. I didn't get my degree.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was interning for Participant Media at Take Part, which, uh-huh, is my first writing job. And I just like could not deal with the pressures of school. I've never been into school. It's always been incredibly hard for me.
Okay.
Just always had like mad ADD. I went to school on a sports scholarship. I, mm-hmm, wanted to do that. And then I started working in the career that I did. And, mm-hmm, I was just like, screw it. I would rather start making money. I got a full-time offer from them. And they kind of knew that I had like more school to go.
Okay.
But like, I just never finished it. And so,
do you think that they didn't say anything but sort of expected you to finish and that the job offer was like contingent on that, even if they hadn't like actually thought it through? No.
Because I think one thing a lot of people, especially a lot of young people just graduating college, are like, how do these places expect you to have experience for an entry-level position?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like all the stuff that people say on job applications, on the job listings for applications, is just complete bullshit. It's,
yeah,
if you're good at what you do, you're getting the job. I mean, I remember at LA Mag, we had an internship program and it was set up with Northwestern, which is, you know, what is it? The Medill School of Journalism.
Medill.
Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, tons of kids filter in from the best journalism program-ish. I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, from the best journalism program in America coming through. And then the best intern we ever had, the best writer, we hired him off of a Medium post that he wrote. Literally, we just read a Medium post and it was like, oh, this dude's like a fearless writer and like he can actually come in and do it. He,
yeah,
may not have all this proper schooling. He may not have like, you know, read the Columbia, you know, School of Journalism ethics guide or whatever.
Right.
But like he can come in and he can do what is the actual work? What is the actual job we're asking him to do?
Yeah. So much of any job is just showing up.
100%.
Every day.
Yeah, I'm also just waiting until it's like woke to not require any degree for anything because college is so exploitative.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that it should be, people need to examine it more and there's so few jobs. Like what job, like I guess you should go to school to be a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
But even medical school I have issues with.
I mean, even my girlfriend is a lawyer and like, you know, going through law school is just the amount of money it takes. It's,
yeah,
just so, and then if you actually want to pay that back in a timely fashion, you have to work for a crazy big law firm and,
right,
book 85 hours a week,
right,
and all this stuff. I mean, it's, I would like doctors to have degrees and qualifications for things, but I mean, it's at the point where the entire system is such a joke to me, and I get really sad about it.
No, absolutely. Aren't there some states where you're allowed to take the bar if you haven't gone to law school?
I think that might be, I don't know.
I think there might be a couple.
Should we do it?
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
That'd be fun.
You still have to read the books, though, because don't you have to cite certain cases?
Yeah, that sounds like a thing you'd need to do.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know much. When my girlfriend was studying for the bar, I would just make her like 5-pound pork roast and drop it off at her door. And I would knock and I'd run away because I knew she didn't want to be distracted.
Oh my God.
So I was more on that side of studying for the bar.
You're bragging on yourself right now. That's such a good
really
boyfriend move.
It's
yeah.
endearing as hell. Yeah.
Amazing.
What are we talking about?
I know. We got off on a tangent.
Georgian
feudal
politics?
I liked it. Yeah. Why not?
Didn't Putin like invade them a year and a half ago or something?
Yeah, they have a fraught relationship. Absolutely. And there have been times when they've tried to be independent, but I think that that's easier said than done. That's for dang sure. But looking, just doing all this research, because this is a rare area where we're talking about a food from a country that I don't know anything about. So I'm looking at these pictures for the first time and it's gorgeous. It's unbelievable how beautiful it is. And now I want to go.
Yeah. I'll book my flight
tomorrow. Okay. We could do a tasting tour of Khachapuris.
Do they have like a huge board of tourism that flies people out to Georgia? Are they like in a stable? Like what?
Yes. I think that they are stable, and I wouldn't have thought necessarily, but in the past year or so when I've decided that selling out is dope, I've realized that almost every country wants journalists with heavy quote marks to come to their country. And then a bunch of people that you and I know went to Armenia like earlier this summer or last year or something. And I was like, oh, right. That part of the world that I know nothing about. And then we should all try and get on those trips.
Why didn't you get on that trip?
Well, I wasn't asked, but it was specifically a booze writer's trip.
Oh, yes. I do know people on that trip.
An Armenian brandy, I think.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So that seemed cool. But
I feel like I saw a bunch of people in Kazakhstan.
Jeff Miller went to Kazakhstan, didn't
Jeff
he?
Went to Kazakhstan.
Yes.
And I think a couple other people.
So Eastern Europe must be super hungry to have journalists come out there.
Yeah. I'm selling out is dope. Like,
it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
we should
really
all be
good.
Doing it. There's so little money and good experiences to be had in this if you don't come from like extreme privilege in this industry.
Yes, agreed.
I want my privilege to be the like Uzbek government buying a plane ticket.
Absolutely. You know? Why not? We should
That's
all grab as much as we can. It's funny because in a weird way, we're so Gen X. Did you ever watch Reality Bites?
Mm-mm.
So the end of it ends with her dumping Ben Stiller because he has a job and that's disgusting, and going with Ethan Hawke who doesn't have a job and that's sexy. And as someone, I think everyone after Gen X who watched that movie was like, what the fuck is happening? This yeah. is weird. Who are we rooting for and what's going on? And so we're actually, I think millennials are coming back to baby boomers. It like surface level, it might look that way because we're like get paid, but it's actually a reaction to the boomers stealing everything.
Yeah.
Gen X could still buy houses.
Yeah, totally agreed with
yeah.
that.
Huh. Interesting. We keep going really off topic from cheese and bread, which is really all anyone ever wants to hear about is cheese and bread. So do you, okay, apparently this is the proper way to eat the boat-shaped khachapuri. Mm. You like tear off the edges of it. And when we say boat-shaped, you actually were more accurate when you said gondola, because the ends of it rise up. Like they put a lot of dough on there and you tear the dough off and then you dip it into the cheese butter egg mixture and eat it that way.
Yes, I've also seen where people will tear it and they will like fully stir all of the cheese and egg and butter together and then create like a soup, and then you like kind of scrape that up, which is like a little bit similar to how a Neapolitan pizza kind of gets that, you know, if you get a real hot cooked one, not one of these like neo-Neapolitan pizzas in LA. And if you get like a real Neapolitan pizza, it's like damn near soupy in the
yeah
middle,
and
know?
It's supposed to be
and it's supposed
by
to
design
be.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of reminds me of the way that like khachapuri is eaten with the dip, and also like Little Caesar's crazy bread. Gonna throw it back to that.
Your favorite thing on the planet.
They serve their marinara sauce ice cold with it and it's lovely.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you
it's like a gazpacho.
Do you dip your pizza in ranch also?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I mean I won't go to a nice pizza. I won't go to like Mozza and be like, can you give me your like buttermilk fermented chive ranch or whatever they have? But no, I will dip
Why
any
other.
Why wouldn't you? Some foods I have, it's a different kind of respect for. Like, I have respect for Little Caesar's Crazy Bread for what it is. It's like,
you better not be getting
99.
Paid for them on my show.
No, I would gladly take money from the Little Caesars people. Like, the owner of Little Caesars paid Rosa Parks' rent for, like, a majority of her life. Have you heard this story?
No.
It is absolutely true. I have a coworker from Detroit, and he's just like, dude, the Little Caesars family is the best. They, like, own the Red Wings. They, like, paid Rosa Parks' rent. I don't know why those two are both moral things, but they are.
So they're kind of the anti-Papa John's?
I think so. I mean, they're very obscenely rich, so it's still probably bad. But but yeah, as far as that goes, definitely the anti-Papa John's.
Oh.
And their $5 hot and ready's now include sausage, available at any Papa John's in your neighborhood.
It. I will bleep all of that out.
Well, you can sell out to the Uzbeki government and take a free blanket.
No, if someone's going to advertise on my show, I want to know about it and get a cut.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I'll Venmo you like $15.
Great, perfect. Then we're fine. We're back on. This is great.
But yeah, I'll dip like, you know, bad to medium to good-ish pizza in ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a tier of pizza where I won't dip in ranch. And I consider Pizzeria Mozza to be on that tier.
Got it.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Mm. One where there's like real craft and not just like, we're selling food for people to actually eat.
Mm-hmm.
If you're selling food for people to like think about, I'm not going to slather ranch in it.
You're so funny. You're in one sentence, you go from like proletariat to absurdly bourgeois and back to proletariat.
Thank you. I contain multitudes.
Yeah. You're a real code switcher, aren't you?
Actually, I
know you are, right?
No, yeah. I mean, that was a big part of my writing, too. It was like, you know, I wanted to go to this kind of bro-y voice and, you know, back again. I think like Bourdain was, you know, the kind of master of that where, you know, just talk about like, you know, eating very like kind of peasant food and then to the indulgences of foie gras. And then he'd like, you know, quote like, you know, Audre Lorde or something and, you know. Yeah, I mean, I took a lot of cues from him.
Oh, because we were talking about the USSR, I can't make it seem like some sort of wealthy utopia during communism, because actually Stalin was from Georgia, which meant...
Yeah, that guy was a dick.
Yeah, he was a huge dick, and because he was from there, that's where he made all of his enemies, you know, people who pissed him off in high school and stuff. So actually, a lot of Georgians did get sent to labor camps. So there is... Also that.
Stalin's like rip shit on plum wine all the time too, right? I wonder if I don't know why that detail from history class as like a seventh grader stuck with me.
Yeah.
But apparently he was just like always messed up on plum wine.
Interesting.
And I just remember reading plum wine and I was like, ooh, I'm a young 12-year-old foodie. I wonder what that's like. And I still do to this day. And I bet it's a Georgian thing if we Googled it.
Yeah, probably. Why not? But so he was drunk?
Apparently Stalin, yeah, apparently he was just like real drunk all
That's
the time.
That's interesting, because you hear about the Nazis being on meth.
Yeah.
It seems like substance abuse often has a lot to do with being a dictator.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You would think that you'd have to be on your game.
Well, I mean, oh God, meth puts you on. Not that I'm speaking from experience of meth. That makes me sound like I'm an old meth pro, and that's not true at all. But no, if anything would put you on your game, it would be amphetamines.
Doesn't it put you too much on your game?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's almost like
itself?
The dictators took things a bit too far, Catherine.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
It's almost like that happened.
I had never thought of that. All right. That makes sense. So we were talking about the boat-shaped, I almost called it pizza, the boat-shaped khachapuri, but apparently that's not the most popular type in Georgia. It's this one called Imeruli from the region of Imereti, and that one is round. So that
Weird.
One really
is
looks
still,
like a pizza.
I was going to say that I like tried to flatten out the boat shape in my mind and I was like, whoa, that, oh, that's pizza.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that one, they actually like roll out a disc of dough, then put all the ingredients in it and then like fold it up like a dumpling, but then roll it again. So it's like a inverted pizza, not a calzone because it's like still the shape and size of a pizza, but everything's just inside the two layers of dough.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then there's kinds with meat in them. You can fill it with cheese and then add more cheese on top. Matilda likes that kind. There's also a spinach and potato puree that is popular. Do you have a favorite place for this dish in Los Angeles?
Yeah, Bravo Pizza and Chicken. There is no better. I mentioned it before.
Yeah.
It's really funny because the owner is Armenian. The owner's wife is Thai. And so the order there is you get the lunch special, two-piece dark roasted fried chicken
mm-hmm.
with fries, and then the khachapuri.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will give you a side of like the maypoy Thai sweet chili sauce.
Yeah.
And you just alternate dipping your chicken in the maypoy sweet chili sauce and then in the butter. And sometimes they'll just dump ranch into the khachapuri.
Sure, why not?
And then create just a ranchy soup in the middle.
Huh.
And so, yeah, but I mean, that's one interesting thing to me is we tend to like really lionize a lot of quote unquote ethnic foods mm-hmm. as like, this is so pure and full of craft and wow, America, you know, yeah. we do things shitty. We eat Little Caesar's crazy bread. And then you realize that like people all around the world are just like trying to eat a fucking lunch.
Right.
You know, not everything has to be. I remember people talking about going to Singapore and being like, man, I really wasn't impressed with the Hainan chicken rice. And I was like, that's just because it's fucking lunch to them, dude.
Yeah.
They're just eating food that is like good and comforting and not everything is the best version of whatever you're going to find.
Yes.
It's like super reductive to take that, you know, idea and apply it to other cultures. So anyways, yeah, the khachapuri is made with pizza dough because they have a bunch of pizza dough and I put ranch in it. And eat it with fried chicken at Bravo Pizza and Chicken. It's incredible.
Well, I love how American that is. Just yeah, a little bit of everything.
Much. I mean, it's total, absolute LA immigrant cuisine, and it's really awesome.
Yeah, when I think about people coming to visit Los Angeles, it's a interesting place to visit because I don't think there's necessarily any like buildings that you need to look at, but you need to go out into the valleys, which have historically been only disparaged, but I think it's where like the most interesting culture is going on.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's also something that hasn't been completely covered to death by every media outlet. I mean, an interesting thing is when I'd been writing about food basically since college, right? Since mm-hmm. like 21 plus. And so I was never able to actually like find out what kind of food I liked just as a person in a way. Because I was always searching for the new restaurant in, you know, whatever West Hollywood adjacent neighborhood.
Yeah.
And all this stuff. And now that I'm like a civilian more or less just out eating on the streets, I'm finding out what I actually like and find interesting too. And it's a lot of these places, like another favorite off topic of Georgian food is Nane Gloria Kitchenette.
Yeah.
The Filipino steam table stew restaurant.
Uh-huh.
There's one in North Hollywood. There's one in Glendale. And it's just like so many, we have a ton of, you know, high-end Filipino places opening up right now in mm-hmm. LA, or at least Filipino inspired. And so many of these restaurants, they have this like hipster LA boilerplate, right?
Okay.
Where you have a seared prawns in a butter that's been infused with whatever international country you're repping at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you look at Bavel and they have the prawns with harissa butter,
uh-huh.
you know, and then you go to the spot in Silver Lake. And I love Charles Eulalia so much. What's it? I'm blanking on. I went to it last week.
The name of it?
Yeah.
Mamsir.
Yeah. At Mamsir, they have the prawns with like calamansi butter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
that's so interesting.
This is just, I mean, the teriyaki burger, you know, this is people introducing others to the kind of international burger, which has been like kind of crapped on for a while.
Yeah.
And then now we just found a new boilerplate. You make a plate of $8 deviled eggs with, you know, harissa on it, or you put kimchi on it, or you put palabok on it. Like it's really weird to see these kind of like boilerplates. And then so many people who have never actually had the cuisine before are going to these spots, and it's in a package that they can understand spending $50 a head. But like, I've just had so much joy in just going to Nane Gloria and not knowing what anything is and just asking questions and getting a $7 plate of just absurdly delicious stews. I mean, not from like this, you know, the Bourdain finding deliciousness in like, you know, crappy food type of thing. Not the like going to Howard Johnson's and eating shitty stale grilled cheese and finding a memory in it. I mean, like, absolutely delicious, balanced, beautiful food.
Yeah.
And it's just from people cooking their food from a steam table in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm like kind of finding out what I actually really care about. Oh, that and burritos. That's like the other, just burritos.
And you do document your food journeys, which is fun.
I do. Too. I had a really emotional Instagram post about a couple weeks ago about not posting on-brand food anymore.
Yes, you did.
That was a big thing where it was like I would lose followers if I posted a picture of, you know, a chopped liver plate or like, you know, some Filipino stew. And
right.
I always kind of connected that to like, oh, if I lose followers and I won't have these opportunities. And now I'm just like sick of representing this, you know, here's a double cheeseburger type of thing. And just, I don't know, want to show people what I'm actually out there eating and like enjoying. And yeah.
That's awesome. So at Culinary Brodown, right? Across all social media.
Yes, that is correct.
Awesome. Josh, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for letting me yell into your microphone and drink your Modelo.
Yeah, you can have another one. Well, no, you can't because you're driving.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Everybody, thank you for listening. And if you could tell one friend about Smart Mouth, that would be dope. Thanks, everybody. Bye.